My name is Justin Levine, manager of the Pugatory, and on the line with me now is Chase Kimball, our very own, and a special guest. His name is Nick, and Chase will tell you just a little bit about him. Let's get going.
So today we're doing a little bit of a different podcast. We are focusing on NHL 19, a popular hockey video game by EA Sports. It's about the only hockey video game there is, honestly. And to talk with us today, we have Mr. Grease Factory. If you are a fan of NHL on Twitter, you've probably heard of him. He is a streamer on Twitch, and lately he's been getting into a lot of the show. So we're going to talk about that a little bit. But how you doing? Welcome to the show. So you've been enjoying the show quite a lot recently. Is that true?
Yeah. I got into it because my buddy gave me his old PS4 when he got a new one. And he gave me a game, and it's pretty good. I can't lie.
Gotcha. So anyone that follows you knows that you have a pretty strong opinion on this. Do you think that Hutt is pay to win?
It really isn't. I mean, people will say that it's pay to win with either money or your time, but you're going to be playing it on your time anyway. So as long as you grind the game, you can get good cards. I've had for the last few years, I've been free to play, and I've had millions of coins and whatever players I really wanted on my team. So I don't think it's really pay to win. It's really about the person behind the controller at the end of the day.
And you ended up making the 99 Legends Master Lemieux this way, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I completed him before Christmas, actually. And that was my big goal for the year, was to not spend any money on the game and complete one of the Master Legends. And I felt pretty accomplished when I did it. Like I said, just a single time. Other people, they might have gotten intimidated than me, but I did it.
Yeah, and a lot of people really consider that the crowning achievement of the game. You know, really the pinnacle, the best card, essentially, aside from the 99 Gretzky. So let's talk about this year content-wise. What do you think of the player variety that we saw this year?
I mean, I liked it. They introduced a whole slew of new alumni, which was refreshing. They gave many different overalls to players. Some people got a set of overalls of their favorite alumni, but I thought it was good. I mean, it was every team basically got, you know, 4 to 5 different guys that you've seen before to use, so your team build, if you're doing all kinds of team build, was a lot better. You know, just having your favorite players, like, I got to use Dennis Savard. He's my buddy's godfather, and I was like, wow, it was great to be able to use him in the game. As a Blackhawks fan, that was big to me. Seeing Esposito in that was also really cool for me. Having Chris Chelios as a reward, I mean, it took a while to get him, but I was still able to get him. He was one of my favorite Blackhawks ever. So I love the just, like, there's so many different players. I love seeing it. I thought it was great by EA. You know, they came to whatever agreement they did with the alumni for the NHL, and I personally loved it. I know a bunch of people who love seeing, like my buddy from Boston, loves seeing Chris Middleton in the game. So I don't know who would be upset with having more players in the game.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you touched on earlier, this was the first year that we saw EA's deal with the NHL Alumni Association. They brought in over 200, quote them, over 200 new alumni to the game. This included bringing back guys like Gretzky, Lemieux, Patrick Waugh, Bob Probert, and some guys we really haven't seen in a while. But we also saw a few notable names that were in the game as recently as last year that left. You know, guys like Marty St. Louis, Nick Lidstrom, Marty Brodeur. So how do you think that balance was? Or was there anybody that you really missed playing with this year?
I mean, I don't know that if we could have technically had him in the game, but I would have loved to have a Pavel Datsyuk card in that. They know that thing, saying I want to run with the guy in my team from the Hawks there, but that 99 Gretzky video was too maybe we could have had him in the game. But there's only one player that I really, really want in the game, and I just don't think he'll ever give his life to the game. That's Paul Kariya. I did miss Eric Lindros because he was a mainstay on my team the last couple of years. And he's just a monster, and I really wish I could have had him again.
Yeah, those power forward types, you know, the bigger, harder hitting guys really seem to be, you know, dominant build in the game. But so next year we have been promised over 600 new alumni, and we've already seen some teasers of some of these guys that are coming back. We've seen that Stevie Y will be back in the game next year, Mr. Steve Yzerman himself. And so I wouldn't doubt that we see some of these guys that we've been missing for a while come back. But I think they do a pretty good job with the deals that they have, because, you know, there are certain leagues like the U.S. Development League, they don't have a deal with. So we couldn't get, you know, some of the most talked about draft picks this year, including, you know, Jack Hughes and then the KHL too. So we miss our Datsuk and we miss our Jágr. But I think that overall, the variety of players that they had this year was really good for what they could do.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more. You know, like I said, there are, like you just said, there are leagues that we can't have players' rights to. But once we get them over, I think we can easily get them in the game.
Yeah, absolutely.
A Papo card should be right up there as well. What's the overall? I don't know, but I think it's the variety pick last year was great. Seeing Yzerman coming back is great. I mean, they've shown a couple cards in a clip, and, you know, it's going to be nice to see the players. And, like, when they dropped them this year, they gave them all different overalls. I think they need to do the same at the start of the year. They need to drop however many and then have a little lower overall and then raise them a little bit. Not the too high overalls too early on. They did a really good job of that this year, not allowing too many high rating cards before January, which kept it interesting after January. You know, some guys sit around Christmas because there's just so many 99 overall players. This year they did a good job of keeping it down, only upgrading them a couple points each time. The only thing that I would have said is they should have given more synergy points out really early on, because they kept getting like one per card and then two per card. In my opinion, pretty late in the game, they should have been bumping them up a little earlier. But the variety that you have with synergy and players, your team can have a million different people on it. That's what I like about it.
Yeah, you brought up a very good point. You know, we didn't see that many high-rated cards or that many 99s, you know, before Team of the Year came out, really. And that was a big problem that people had with last year, I think. There were just so many 99s, and there were so many different types of 99s that you could get, you know, multiple different 99s for under 200K by this time last year. You know, so I think that is a pretty good point. So this year was the first year they adapted their upgrade scale, where they only allow 2 points to upgrade a player's overall per month, and that's a cap. So if they have, you know, prime time hit a milestone, they can earn 2 points per month at a maximum as a performance upgrade. Do you think that accomplished the goal that they wanted it to?
I think it did. I think the lower end card, like if somebody had like an 80 to start, even after 7 months, at two points, if they got an upgrade every month, they'd only be at a 94. You know, like maybe they could have bumped them up a little bit more to start than, I don't know, 85 overall, that group two. But I think it was good that players could earn multiple cards a month if they were on Team of the Week and then hit a milestone, they'd get two of the same overall, but they would have different synergies. And, you know, sometimes one synergy would fit your team and the other wouldn't. So there was, you know, I didn't run Burner for two laps this year, the third Burner. I ran for the boys, and I was waiting for a Tony McDavid card that had for the boys, and that really didn't happen for a while. So I was just running on McDavid for a bit, but it didn't matter at the end of the day because, you know, know, we had all of those, all of the legends, and then we had, let's not forget, a free monthly legend every month, which was, I thought that was a great thing for someone free to play.
Yeah, that's a perfect transition to my next question. So this year we saw the introduction of monthly legends, where from the daily login packs and the daily goals, you can get monthly collectibles, and these collectibles go into sets, and eventually they reward you with a monthly legend player that slowly increased in overall. We started out the year with a 88 Ray Ferraro, and then we ended up with a 96 Mark Messier, or Bobby Hull, depending on how quickly you turned in your collectibles. But what do you think about that? And the milestone legends too. We had a lot of milestone legends, you know, so trade in, you know, complete 400 sets, you get a 94 overall Joe Sakic. Some people said that this created a lot of mirrored teams where you could play someone online and they could have the exact same lineup up and down because you both completed the same objectives. What do you think about that?
Yeah, so the monthly legend thing, I loved it. It wasn't hard to get. You needed 80 collectibles a month. Basically, every month has almost 30 days, minus February. All you need is log in twice to one daily collectible thing, and you could get 90 every month. So it was relatively easy to get. You could stack them, so if you didn't like one legend, they had a trade-in set for the next month. So the next month came, you could boost up with all the collectibles you had saved. The milestone legends, they were great. I mean, you had scored 2,000 goals to get Mike Gardner, which was great. You could play offline. You could grind that way, which is what I did. I was able to just grind and get all the legends that I could for free. And if someone else had the same legends as me, that didn't bother me. Like, some people were bothered by playing the same team, but it just showed me that, hey, this guy's put in the time, he's scored this many goals, he's won this many games online. It just showed me that, okay, this guy's kind of dedicated, let's see how good he is now. And if you had the same team, then it was really a battle of who is better. Not who has the better team, but who's better. Especially if you had the same guys. The 94 second card is unreal. He's still on my team. Some of these guys ended up fizzling out and off my team, but I knew if somebody had a Tim Horton legend card, that they made it to Division I. So they had to be somewhat good to make it there. So the game was going to be a pretty good game for me.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you touched on, you know, this system wasn't immune to you know, exploitation or grinding. You know, a lot of people would go on to the team of the week on rookie mode, or the Kelowna Rockets, their first challenge, and just grind out goals that way. So I think that they did a great job setting these up to be achieved in the long run, but they could be grindable. But I think for the most part, they really accomplished their goal, because there's not really a way to rush sets the same way like that. So the Sakic was really a prize to get.
Yeah, much like the Chelios. There was no way to get Chelios. I'm pretty sure before it was like January 14th, 15th, somewhere there, you had to log in every 8 hours to get this Chelios. I mean, I know one guy who logged in religiously, and he got him the first thing to get him, but most other people didn't get him until February or March, which was fine, but, you know, I think that this thing would have made it a big 2,000 online goal. That would have, for Gardner, it would have been a little different. Not everybody would have had him as quickly. I think they might have learned from that. We'll see this year if they do it as differently. But I thought the way that they did it was fine by me. It was good enough. You know, doing sets and having a set cooldown, meaning you could only do the sets so many times. So you had to wait. You couldn't get back too quickly. 10,000 shots for Al MacInnis was a ridiculous amount of shots, but I thought it was still fair.
That was brutal. Yeah, that took a long time to grind out. But so then there were some on that list that kind of got forgotten about, I feel like. The 89 Andy Moog, the 85 Claude Lemieux, the 88 McCarty. Those guys didn't really crack a lot of squads by the time that people earned them. You think that there was a little bit of a misbalance there?
Well, I think the problem is that with Moog, it's the size of them. You know, small goalies have never been good in HUD. For whatever reason, small goalies are always exploited, just shelled with shots in the upper So he kind of, you know, didn't crack too many people's lineups just simply because of that, because the goalies have been a weak point for a few years now. So, you know, that moved. As for McCarty's 88, don't forget he started as an 85, but then they released an 85 McCarty, and people were getting him in their starter pack, so then they bumped McCarty up to an 88, but left Quad at an 85. For the amount of time they expect to get those guys, I thought at least McCarty could have, Lemieux could have been an 88. But, it is what it is. McCarty made my team, the 88 McCarty made my team for a bit. He was a beast at hitting, he was a beast at defense. Just wasn't really offensively gifted. We had 94 sacks that you can. November, maybe just a month to get a 90 Telios. I thought maybe Telios could have been bumped up. They had to wait the longest to get him.
Yeah, exactly.
Missing out on those couple players was okay. They ended up releasing 94 Diamond, McCarty, and Fogging and Cards. So that kind of made up for it. But it would have been nice to have those grinders on your fourth line, early on. Maybe at like an 89 overall would have been okay. But for the most part, I think they gave away so many cards this year. Like in challenges and in milestone legends, and three monthly legends that you can only complain so much with how much they actually gave away to us.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think that they could have done a little bit more for that, because I can honestly say that Claude Lemieux has never touched the ice for my team. But with all the other, there were, the few that they did miss on in that regard, I think that they hit on a lot more to make it, not as noticeable. All right, so one last question before we get into some of the gameplay and game modes within HUT. Let's talk about the playoff cards real quick. We saw a lot of variety of players in playoff cards. So do you think that there's guys like Sean Corrali or Matt Grzelcyk should have a 99, with the guys like Stamkos and Kucherov and McDavid, or does that just kind of go back to the player variety?
I'm sorry, you cut out for half of that question. Can you repeat it?
Oh, sorry about that. Playoff cards. We saw a lot of variety with the playoff cards. So do you think that guys like Sean Corrali and Matt Grzelcyk should have 99s with guys like Johnny Gaudreau and, Nikita Kucherov?
Chase, are you there?
Yep, I'm still here. Are we having some connection issues?
All right, try again now. This should be good.
All right, can you hear me?
Yeah.
All right, cool. We'll just edit that out. Not a big deal.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk about playoff cards for a minute. So there was a lot of variety of players that got playoff cards, and a lot of players got high-rated playoff cards. So do you think the guys like Ivan Barbashev and Noel Achari should have 99 playoff cards? When we were talking about other 99s like Ovechkin, Kucherov, and Johnny Gaudreau.
I mean, yes and no. The way that it was introduced, to my knowledge, it was you're going to get this low to mid-rated 80 to 85 overall card, whatever it was, and if the team keeps winning, they'll keep upgrading. If they would have kept that at, let's say, a plus one for every win, and only had guys go from 85, let's say they started at 85, and then if they won the Stanley Cup, of course they'd end up at 99. That would have been okay with me. A lot of guys got 99. Did they deserve it? Not so much, especially, I don't think there should have been 99 overall players on teams that didn't make it. I guess no 99 did today. Did any 99 make it that weren't in the Stanley Cup final? I can't remember. But either way, there was a lot of them. It might have been to make a bigger variety of teams, to differentiate teams, to make teams not all so similar. Whereas other games had the same legend, but then once the playoff cards came out, it was, I can drop this legend because now I have this 96, 97, 98, 99 playoff card. So then it was able to, you know, kind of spread out the lineup a little more. So was it okay? It was okay. Was it deserved? Not really. If I had, I mean, St. Louis, they won, so putting out a team of the week of, you know, 92 to 99 overall players would have been five based off of their playoff performance. But I don't think that, you know, Old Atari should have had a 99 or Silver should have had a 99. You know, what did they really do at the end of the year to be a standout in the playoffs? Did they have some goals? Yeah, sure. Did they have some good games? Yeah, sure. But I would say they deserve a 99, no.
Yeah, because that brought up a question to a lot of people of, you know, what deserves a 99, who deserves a 99. And, you know, you, with each playoff round having a new batch, its own batch of playoff players, you know, eventually gets so far down the lineup that, you know, you're looking at these, you know, career third, fourth line guys or these guys that are, you know, might not crack the roster next year and they're getting 99s. And a lot of people enjoyed playing with that variety. But, you know, there was still a pretty significant group of people that were like, wait a minute, why does this fourth liner have the same, you know, maxed out overall as the stars?
Right. Like, what? I don't mind having 99s in the game. I think it's great. Like, the good cards was fun to use. But they should be collective. Like, the best of the best of that year should have 99s. Like, Ryan O'Reilly deserves a 99. Jordan Binnington deserves a 99. Like, these are guys who throughout the year, or when Binnington came up until when they won the Cup, he, of course, deserves a 99. But, yeah, like, the third and fourth liners who are in and out of the lineup don't deserve a super high-rated star. You know, but, again, it is what it is, and they just made the lineup more diverse by doing so, and I think people enjoyed not seeing the same players over and over again.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd agree with that. I think they did the same thing with the flashback series. We got to see, you know, players that were, you know, older players, veteran players that really weren't earning card upgrades, or players that are, you know, might be on the LTIR or might have, you know, retired a little bit ago, get high overall cards. And I thought that was a lot of fun. You know, we got a high overall buff on his winger. We got to see, you know, guys like Nathan Horton get a high overall card, and Juan Lucic, and, you know, Jiří Tolusti. I think that was another fun thing that they did to increase the variety of the lineups and also give some players that might not be earning upgrades or have the ability to earn upgrades, you know, get, you know, who are well-liked players, you know, maybe fan favorites, to get them on our ultimate teams.
Yeah, I didn't mind the flashbacks at all. I mean, especially when it became a choice path and you could choose which team you wanted that player to have their card on. You know, that brought a nice little change. So, like, Jordan Tutu, I took his Blackhawks card when I was able to pick one of the four because I'm a Blackhawks fan. I didn't want him with a Nashville card because Nashville's one of our rivals. So it was nice that I was able to choose which card that I got. You know, that was a little thing that I like. Other flashback players, they're great. Like, of course, I wanted that Buffalo winger card. Who didn't? He's a beast on D, let alone on offense. Gives him a little better stats so that he could play better on the wing. I thought that was great.
All right, and one last thing on player overalls and cards before we move on to some of the more, you know, different game modes and gameplay and HUD. Right now, we're right in the middle of legend upgrades. And early in the year, EA tried this with the international players of the game. They did Sundin and a few others. And this got a very mixed reaction, I'd say. A lot of people were not too happy about it because they were told that the legend card would be the highest overall that a player would receive all year. And now we're getting nothing but sets dedicated to upgrading these legends to 99. What's your take on that?
Yeah, early on, you know, when they did the international player of the game, it kind of blew up a little bit. People wanted the legend card. I mean, the card design on the legend card is one of the best of the game. And you basically, if you wanted a higher card, you'd fidget it to this other card, which was as aesthetically pleasing. So that sucks. You know, and if you're going to upgrade a legend, just upgrade the legend card itself. Like, you know, I didn't like the international player of the game card. know, they could have used players that were playing now and given them a little higher overall. You know, that was the best way to go about it in my head. And now I think that they're doing the 99th. That's because everybody's getting a 99 now because the game's getting stale. It's slowing down. They're trying to keep people interested. You know, updating the legend cards themselves, I'm not a fan of. The milestone legend cards, that makes it worth it to me because these people couldn't get higher cards because they had set, you know, 91 Gartner was set at 91 Gartner and there was no other Gartner that came out.
So yeah, exactly.
This is a way to upgrade those milestone cards for people who actually grinded for it. You know, how that they wanted a higher overall important card. I don't think that's being one.
But at the same time, you know, looking at some of the players that have higher overall cards, looking at guys like Dave Andrychuk, whose highest is an 89, and looking at a guy like Luke Robitaille, whose highest card's a 90, that seems a little absurd, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, if you're gonna upgrade legends, you don't need to upgrade 94 Sakic while you have, you know, 88 Ty Domi. You could upgrade Ty Domi to a higher card. I know they did, but I don't think upgrading a 94 Sakic to a 99 is going to make that much of a difference, or a 96 Messier to a 99 Messier. Apparently it's good. I mean, he plays almost the same for me, so I don't really see a change in it. But, you know, upgrading the Chelios from a 93 to a 99, it's okay. The McInnes, the 91 to a 99, that's more acceptable. But upgrading, you know, 96 overall players to 99 overall players, I don't think that's necessary.
Yeah, gotcha. So just kind of inflates the market a little more, gives, you know, more 99s and more sets. And then they put the legends back in packs too. So you can build these legends in a set, you get the choice pack, or you can pull them still. So that kind of takes away from the rarity of them. And these, you know, some of these 99 overall legends, you're seeing them, you know, peak at about 300K for a 99 overall of, you know, a legend just because they're not very hard to get.
Yep, it goes back to last year where all the 99s were out. You could have as many as you wanted for 150, 200K.
Yeah. So let's talk about some of the game modes within HUT. So Draft Champions, did you play any Draft Champions this year at all?
I didn't play a single game of it. Once I saw the reward and how quickly they see out the lead, I didn't play a single game of it. And it was my plan. My plan was to grind Draft Champions and get higher overall cards, like in set. I think 17 was the last one that was worthwhile, where you got a 92 Grossman, a 92 Malhotra, and a 92 Ray Emery or something like that. Like, and then last year, it fell by the wayside. And it was nothing. It was useless to play it last year, and then I thought they'd improve it this year, and it was useless to play it this year. I mean, it's got to be somewhat easy to give better rewards. Or at least introduce new reward every single month.
Like, yeah, the rewards this year they were all 85s, and they were all of, you know, pretty well known players. Like Matthews had one, I believe. So he already had his card was an 84. So you're going to do all this grinding to get a one overall upgrade on the base card?
Exactly. Like, what's the point?
Yeah, so and they an 85 was replacement level pretty quickly into the game. So you were doing a whole lot of grinding for a card that wasn't going to make your lineup. You know, it didn't make sense. And I thought surely when I saw the rewards that they would be adding some higher overalls later on or some updates. But, you know, once again, just like last year, they didn't touch it. It seems like they forgot about it after day one.
Yeah, I mean, so it was. In my head, I could either grind Draft Champion hard to get an 85 Matthews or score 2,000 gold and get a 91 Gartner. That's a pretty simple choice in my head.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. And, you know, it's one of those things, again, where you're asking, and I think the Draft Champions could be a really cool game mode. You know, you get to draft a themed team and you get to play with players that you might not have or that you might not, you know, be able to play with. Maybe it's a coin thing, maybe. You know, they're just a really rare player. I think that could be, it's really cool. And I think that the level playing field that it creates team-wise is a really cool dynamic that you don't really see in Hutt. And they just absolutely botched it.
Yeah, like, you know, or you just pick a player because you think, hey, I've been thinking about buying this guy. Let's see how he plays. Let's see how I play with him. And you don't even really want to do it because there's no point.
Yeah, I'd absolutely agree with that. So the challenges, there were lots and lots of challenges available day one. What do you think about all of those?
Again, as a free-to-play player, the challenges were great because I'm pretty sure I added it up. And you, if you did every single challenge in the game on the base challenges that they had, if you did every single one, you could earn around 400,000+ points.
Wow, and that's not even including you pull in the packs.
Right. So for someone who's not spending money, basically getting a free 400K is a big deal. And a lot of people were like, well, all the challenges are dumb, blah, blah, blah. Right, but doing those challenges earn you not only the free coins at the end of it, but it earns you, goals, games played, hits, shots, everything for the milestone legends that you could do.
Yeah, so did the challenges get repetitive for you? Did they get a little bit boring, a little bit dull?
I mean, at any point in time, it was all repetitive on what to do. And EA did try to mix up with what you needed to do, but, like, simply win a game against the team that, you know, you could score a goal and then skate around. And you did that a bunch. And, again, it was just free coins for me, so I didn't care. Practice and do whatever.
Yeah, I feel like some of the objectives in these challenges, the 1-star, 2-star, 3-star challenges, I feel like they can get very repetitive. You know, it's like win by 2 goals, take 10 more shots, win 3 faceoffs. You know, they kind of recycle them. So the team that you're playing against changes, and maybe the requirements change a little bit, but it's all basically kind of the same thing.
Yeah, it is the same thing. And going back to the beginning of the interview with why I like the MLB is because their challenges are very in-depth, very different, you know, based on real-time events like the Griffey Sr. and Griffey Jr. back-to-back home run challenge. Like, why is something in Hutt? Like, they used to have, like, some moments where, like, you had to recreate someone scoring 2 goals in the last 3 minutes of a game to win the game. That should be a challenge. Where you earn points and something. Like, why are real life things not the challenges?
Yeah, exactly. I totally agree with you because you even see some other EA franchises where they're like recreate history or even change history. You know, they're like make a comeback when this team didn't actually make a comeback, or you know, they say recreate this moment by passing to this player and scoring with this player. But you know, that's something that's just has fallen by the wayside in HUD. You know, I feel like. And I think that they might be trying to adjust some of that next year. They might be adding a little bit of that with the introduction of squad battles. I think that would be a welcome improvement over their current formula, where it's just, you know, the same thing, 2-minute periods, earn all 3 stars, and then go to the next challenge where you play 2-minute periods and earn all 3 stars.
Right. And then there's also in the challenges in HUD where you don't need to earn all 3 stars to move on to the next challenge. Well, that should be a requirement that if you want to move on to the next challenge, you don't just need 1 star to move on. You need to get all the stars to move on.
Wow. So you should have to complete every single objective for that particular game to move on to the next one. And so you have to earn all max rewards before you get the next one.
Right. I think that would be a welcome thing because I know that there are times where you just, the first reward is just coins, but the third reward is a pack. So all you do is you get 1 star in the first one, 1 star in the second one, and then earn all 3 in the third one. Well, that's just, you know, not cheating the system, but working the system, I'd say. And I think that if they made it where you had to earn all 3 stars to move on, it'd be a little different.
Yeah, gotcha. Especially with these event challenges, like you see that where you have to earn the 91 Camilleri, the 91 Ryan Reeves for the free agency sets, that would really change the entire dynamic of that a lot, having to earn all 3 stars all the way through.
Exactly. I could go through and get one star on every one until the very last one, and then boom, I got a free card.
Yeah, exactly. That seems like a little, you know, not very much work for a 91. I know that a lot of people still have, you know, a lot better than 91 cards on their team, but, you know, let's still remember it's a 91 overall card. It's not a terrible card by any stretch of the imagination.
Right. And I made a team last year of guys who had special celebrations in the game, and Ryan Reeves was a mainstay, and he was an 82 overall or 84 overall for a long time. He was on my first power play. It was great. You know, he was a monster. He couldn't really get knocked off guys. He would kill people when he hit them. So, like, getting at this 91 doesn't seem like a bad thing to me because I love playing with the guy.
But it was worth it to dab on people, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Hey, people hated it. I had so many people quit once you score a dab on them. Oh, man, they quit real quick.
All right, so let's talk about some of the gameplay this year. What was your overall impression of the gameplay of NHL 19?
I mean, which path? Which tuner? There were so many different times we had to readapt to the game. It was ridiculous. You know, if we go back to the beta of 19 a year ago, that was the best NHL I'd ever played. It was hands down the best NHL I'd ever played. And then day one came, and boom, there was a patch to the beta. And then there was another patch day one, and then it just kind of went downhill from there. I thought that the way that they had the tripping penalties, where you couldn't spam poke, you couldn't just swing your defensive skills, that caused people to actually play defense or have to try to learn to play defense. Hitting still mattered in the beta. Hitting still mattered day one. Then it got nerfed. The hitting got nerfed. The poking got nerfed. Then it became figure skating. You know, could I adapt? A little bit. Am I going to go all out and adapt like top guys? No. They can have that. I don't want to play a game that's so unrealistic that it's not like real hockey. And that's kind of what it turned into. Could I do what they do? Sure. But to me, it's just not worth it to play like that.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. I think that the beta, you know, skating felt really fluid. The goalies were great. The goalies played very, very well. And then I feel like a lot of the community might point to a few prominent players with maybe bigger voices in them that advocated for a lot of changes. And then these changes came. And I think that a lot of people would say that the gameplay of NHL 19 is pretty good overall.
Yeah, I totally forgot about how good the goalies were. People hated that they could score on the goalies. I thought it was great. Did I want a few more cross-crease goals that I thought should have been goals? Sure. But it was nice having to win a game by a goal or win a game 4-2 instead
yeah, I mean,
of 9-1.
I mean, that's what hockey is. Hockey's a game of, you know, barring a really particularly bad night from a goalie. It's a game of 1-2 goal games, really. I mean, if you look across the board, we don't really have these, you know, 4 goals in the second period rage quit games in real life. I think that right. It was realistic.
Right. And, you know, if I remember correctly, in the beta, the one-hand puck didn't work every time. But during the year, the one-hand puck was 100%.
Oh, man, that's my takeaway move, and it's I am on to the point where I'm about 90% on it.
Yep. I mean, the skating was good. The skating, you know, there were vast improvements from 18 to 19, but skill zoning is still effective. The LP, I mean, it is what it is, but when they turn, like, left LP how it is, but then turn down the ability to bump guys off the puck for a while, there was nothing you could do. Guys could just turn backwards, skate along the boards, and you couldn't hit them. Like, they just were able to hit and knock off the puck.
Oh, yeah, I'd have Legend Pronger barreling at someone along the boards and then just kind of bounce off. That's not how that works.
Right.
Yeah, so, you touched on earlier the use of backskating in LT and L2. So we saw a big rise of people back skating into the zone to draw tripping penalties. What do you think of the state of back skating as it is right now?
The NHL 20 beta back skating, I don't think it's as effective. I think it's useful. I think it is crazy, but I also saw that you can bump guys. They won't necessarily lose the puck every time, but it'll definitely slow them down. So I think, you know, my dream would be to only be able to use LP on defense to turn your guys game back. But at the same time, how much offense could you create without being able to turn away from a guy quickly or turn and stop? Like, a lot of guys use LP to simply turn and then stop so that the defenseman skates by him and then they move on. You know, it's in a good place. I'd like a little less, or make it a little more where they would lose the puck more if they use it too much. I think that would be the best thing. Is if you're sitting there LPing the whole time, you lose more likely to lose the puck.
And I think that a big problem with the state of backskating in NHL 19 right now, they've really addressed in the beta, is how player speed works when you're backskating. Because as of now, backskating, players keep their speed and can continue to move quickly while backwards very, very well. And then in the beta, they've already adjusted and made changes and pointed out that, okay, so when you're backskating now, your player is not going to be able to continue to speed up, but he's actually going to lose speed. So, you know, eventually, if you stay turned around for too long, your guy's going to be, you know, he's not going to be going anywhere very quickly.
Yeah, that's the other thing that's really good about it is, from what I read, they increased straight line speed and they decreased the LT speed. So if someone's skating backwards, you're more likely to catch them from behind or get to them quicker if you're just skating at them straight on. So, I mean, again, the beta we're playing is 2 months old, and we're not going to see the game for almost 2 months. So what's really going to have changed in that four-month time frame? I think day one's going to be, I don't want to say a different game, but it's going to have different aspects to it. I've already heard that the passing speed has been increased, so that's good because the passes are a little slow, causing a lot of turnovers. But what are we going to see? It's up in the air, but the beta, it's fun. I just didn't get too much into it, knowing that it was 2 months after, 2 months behind, and it's 2 months game launch, so I'm not really going to get my hopes up. And this is kind of EA's fault, because last year they gave me a great game and then changed it. So now I'm like, well, I don't know, I'm skeptical.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think that a lot of people saw a huge change between the beta and what we're playing now. And a lot of people are very skeptical about this beta that we're seeing, because I see, my problem with the beta was when the beta came out, it came up with sort of a disclaimer where they gave us a big document of all of the known problems, all these things are going to be fixed. It's like, well, how can I effectively tell what the game is going to be like? And how can I tell if you've really fixed it if you're giving me a version that you haven't worked on in 2 months and that you're, you know, presenting me with paragraphs of what you know is wrong with it?
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah, I think that my problem with the beta that we got is that when it came out, it came with a sort of disclaimer from EA. They gave us paragraphs upon paragraphs of what they know was wrong with it, and said also that, you know, we haven't worked on this in 2 months. So I don't think that we can really get an accurate, you know, feel for what the game is like and see these changes. But this is the beta that we were given anyways.
Yeah. They, for whatever reason, they released all those notes on unknown problems. But, you know, I mean, I even tweeted it, like, you're giving me a beta with all these problems that you know about. Why are you giving me this beta? And some people are like, oh, well, then it would just be a demo. Well, let it be a demo. The demo is still technically a beta. Like, anything that's not the final product is going to be a beta. Well, maybe they wanted to just see how it would handle online. Well, this beta online isn't going to play, in my head, the same as the beta that is in the stage it's at now. Because it's a different game with different features, with different things going on. So how is the beta that is now going to play online? We don't know, because we weren't given it. The EA doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And this is a pretty late beta when you think about when the game is coming out. And it came with their pre-order structure. You had to pre-order by July 2nd, I think it was, to get the 85 overall cover item. So they wanted you to go ahead and pre-order and put money down and commit to buying the game before you got to see any kind of gameplay from it at all. And I think that was kind of shady. That raised a red flag for me.
Yeah, I definitely wasn't going to pre-order the game with the fact that, you know, I didn't know what the game would play like. And, you know, I wasn't going to spend my money on that knowing that I didn't know what the game was like.
Yeah. So you've been streaming the beta a little bit. Give me your overall overarching impression of what you played so far and how maybe a level of how optimistic you are going into next year.
I'm hopeful. But, you know, I'm a lifelong hockey fan, so I'm hopeful that the fixes that they make will make NHL 20 better. You know, Eliminator mode, who asked for that? I don't even care about it. As long as they fix the gameplay or make the gameplay better to be more realistic. Now, at first, I was like, all you worked on was the shot animations, but personalizing the game more will make the game better, in my opinion. I'm hopeful, is all I can say. I hope that it comes out and it's good and it makes me want to play it, grind it like I did last year. But if it comes out and I'm playing it, doesn't feel good, I don't know.
Yeah, I understand for sure. And I think you touched on something very interesting there. You know, they added this eliminator mode, and it's just kind of, I think for a lot of players, it's just kind of like, you know, who cares? Because we saw the same thing with the addition of ones and the addition of threes last year. It was cool. It was a novelty for the first like week that NHL 19 came out, and I did not play it. Yeah, exactly. I think that's the problem that a lot of people ran into, including myself. I felt no drive to grind out three, the extra three player. Like, I think you can get like a 90 overall player for beating threes mode, but only for your threes team. I didn't play threes enough to justify that grind or want to have a desire to upgrade that team like I did Huff.
I wanted to grind for Huff players. I didn't want to grind for, you know, about, and again, this is just me. Like, I don't play it, so it's not a some people might have really wanted to grind for that player, that blowhorn, or that cruising pump, which apparently some people who grind to these all year still don't have. Like, and they really want the cruising pump, so, you know, I don't know. I just hope that the gameplay fixes that they've made already and are going to continue to make are going to make the game feel more authentic.
Absolutely. Well, we'll see very soon. NHL 18 comes out in NHL 20. Wow, where have I been? NHL 20 comes out in just a little over a month, so we'll be seeing shortly. Thanks very much for coming on. Really appreciate having you on today. Before we let you go, one more thing, just a happy late birthday to you. And I want you to plug all of your social channels where everybody can find you.
I appreciate the birthday wishes. Thank you. I'm getting pretty old now, but I appreciate you guys having me on and everything. You can follow me on Twitter at BruceBatch16. At my main go-to is I'm all over Twitter. I don't have an Insta for my gaming yet, but there'll be some things coming up to let you guys follow. So if you just follow my Twitter, you'll find everything that you need.
All right. Thank you very much for coming on. I'll have to have you on Wednesday.
All right. Let me know.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks, buddy.
And that does it for the Puck Authority podcast. My thanks to Nick and to Chase. Insightful with the NHL 20 beta version. And a great conversation with Chase. And Chase, again, thank you for all the time and the effort that you've put into preparing this, and for finding Nick. And you'll be joining us again, hopefully next week with David, for episode 3 of the Puck Authority podcast live here on Anchor. Thank you very much.